Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening? Happy Friday, everybody. It is I, none other than the king of DC media, William Powell, internationally known, nationally respected, and locally appreciated. Let me remind you that in 2 weeks, on October 18th, in celebration of International James Bond Day, which is today, I'm going to welcome director and author Paul Kiriazzi, author of the James Bond Lifestyle Seminar. Paul has worked with a lot of old school actors like Adam West and Nancy Kwan, so you know that's going to be a hot show. Tonight, I'm going to welcome the fantastic actress of TV shows like Lincoln Heights, The Shield, 6 Feet Under, Soul Food, and many others. I'm talking about none other than Nikki Michaud, and let me patch her in here. Good evening, Nikki. Is that you?
Yes, it's me. Good evening. Hello.
Fantastic. Thanks for so much for joining me tonight.
Oh, my God. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Where are you now?
I am walking out in Woodland Hills. I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay. Is it sunny or smoggy?
Well, it actually was not a bad day. It kind of cooled off and nice and kind of cool, and it's still kind of a warm night, and I love warm nights, so it's all good.
Okay, hey, so tell me a little bit about that film you wrote, Veil.
Veil. Oh, Veil is my venture into the sci-fi world. You have to excuse the noise, I'm outside. Veil is my venture into the sci-fi world. It's a black female superhero that I created. I actually wrote a feature version, and then I shot a short film version of it. It's really fun and exciting, and have a new superhero team, and hopefully, you know, I'll be able to get it out there into the public someday.
Okay, what was your inspiration for it?
Oh, you know, it's really funny. I was sitting down sort of thinking about things I wanted to talk about, issues I wanted to discuss, and they were all very serious, heavy, dramatic issues, and I was very bored very quickly. And I thought, well, how can I talk about this in a way that's exciting and fun? And I thought, aha, sci-fi. Because sci-fi is a place where you can really comment about society but not beat people over the head about it. You know, you can have a good time but yet have a really specific message. And it's buried in this cool world where people shoot them up and all this other good stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, you don't want to beat your audience over the head. That's never a good idea.
Mm-mm. You want to have fun. I mean, I go to the movies to eat popcorn and cry and scream at the screen. I mean, that's where I go.
Fantastic. So tell me, now, what was the catalyst, the one thing that propelled you into TV roles?
Oh, man. You know, the thing that really made me do it was 6 Feet Under. The writing was so good. The actors were so good. And it was just great stuff to be a part of. I mean, every so often you have films that come across your landscape that you might get a chance to do, like independent films. But there's so much really, really, really strong television that it really made me excited about doing TV, and I feel lucky to have done some of the fantastic shows I've done.
Well, stepping back to, I know one of your first major roles on TV was ER. So, like, what led you to get to, what were some of the things you were working on before ER? Was it stage? Was it
stage.
Any films?
Actually, before ER, I was on the stage, and when I was cast in ER, I actually did the live episode of ER. It was a really, it's not often that you get to do one shot on a show that kind of launches you in a certain aspect. It really launched my television career because of the profile of that show. But I was actually on stage performing Elektra, playing Elektra, and it's an amazing Greek tragedy and very, very difficult. So I was doing that and auditioning, and I auditioned for ER, and actually the live episode was more like a play than an actual, than a normal TV show because it was shot, well, because it was live, it was basically a 45-minute show, and we didn't stop. And even for commercial breaks, it was basically like you hide and then you keep going. Because, and so it was very play-like, so it's kind of a perfect perfect blend. I mean, we had 2 weeks of rehearsal and, you know, William H. Macy, all these amazing actors who were on ER at that time. It was amazing.
How has the TV business changed since you've been in it?
I would say since I've been in the TV business, which has been a minute, it's gotten larger, actually. It's gotten larger and more creative and more diverse in some ways. I mean, certain things aren't as diverse. We have less of our comedies in terms of African American stuff, but in terms of just the overall, the cable shows have brought really more and more quality work. Because back, like around when I did ER, pretty much there was only HBO and Showtime. I could be mistaken, but from my memory, it was HBO and Showtime who were doing some of the really cool creative stuff. But now, you know, TNT and AMC and A&E and, you know, who knows who's going to pop up with the new show next. And then, you know, BET's got to deal with the Akil. So there's so much room for great projects, for great material. It's really grown. It's pretty cool. And also what's great about TV is that the cable networks, they don't need to sell to a wide audience. So they're very specific, very kind of niche market, which is great because you get a very specific kind of show. Like you can do, even though HBO is pretty broad, but you can do something like The Wire. You know, that's so specific and interesting and good. And it does not need to cater to the masses. This is the show. This is what it's about. Either you like it or you don't. But there's a real big level of artistic freedom in that.
Yeah, because years ago, I mean, you'd have a lot of brilliant but canceled shows. And you know, they were
exactly.
very good. They didn't last
exactly.
very long. So now you talk about, like, basic cable. You got A&E, you got FX. So
exactly,
I go back to the early 2000s. I remember there was a little network called FX, and they were the little network that could, and they'd have reruns of, like, Married with Children. But in spring of 2002, one of my all-time favorite shows, The Shield, premiered. And I'm a big Sean Ryan fan.
Yeah.
And so, tell me a little bit about working with Sean Ryan and Paris Barclay and all those guys. How was that?
Paris wasn't over there. It was Sean Ryan, Scott Brazil, and Glenn Mazzara, and Kurt Wimmer. And, I mean, that group of guys and Michael Chiklis and all the guys on the strike team, that was ridiculous. I mean, that was ridiculous. And when I got that job, it was a ridiculous dream come true. I mean, just to tell you a little bit about the story of the auditioning for that, it was basically she was a Vice cop, right? She was another undercover cop. And you knew she went undercover in Vice. But the role was not written for a black woman. It was written for, not at all. I was the only black woman who read for it. It was a white female role. And my team had argued for me to get it to go in and read for it, and I did. And I remember not really knowing how to audition for it because, you know, The Shield is an in-your-face, edgy, gritty show, okay? And here was a woman who was undercover. And they had basically told me they had designed this character to be the female Vic Mackey. And Vic Mackey was Michael Chiklis' character. And I kept thinking, how do I do this? I mean, she was a cop, but she's a female Vic Mackey, so what do I do? So I literally went into the audition in hooker clothes, even though all the audition was cop talk. Cop scene over here, cop scene over there, cop. And I thought, well, if this girl's a crazy chick like I think she is, she's not taking off her hooker garb. She doesn't care. So I went into the audition, and I played every hooker known to man. So I'm like, I got this. Don't worry about it. And I can do the whole cop thing. So I remember going in and then kind of freaking out in the lobby going, oh, my God, I'm in like a these boots and a skirt and everybody else is in pants and, you know, professional cop attire, right?
Right.
And I'm here like I walked off the street and I'm like, oh, geez, Nikki, what were you thinking? That's the craziest choice in the world. But, it, you know, you talk to this little actor conversation you have with yourself. And it's like, no, you're right. Just go with it. This is what it is. You can't go home now anyway. She would do this. This is what she would do. And I went in, I read a couple times for Scott Brazil, and they brought me back in to work with Michael Chiklis, and I literally played it up. I'll never forget, like, I put my, you know, there's a chair in the room, and I put my high heel boot on the chair, and I'm taking my boot off, like, because the whole thing is she's just a temptress. That's all she is, and she's in your face with her sexuality. And I thought it was funny because the first episode I did of The Shield, she's walking around the barn in like a bra with some straps across her, and that is The Shield. That is quintessential The Shield. I love doing that show. It was awesome. I love those guys. Those guys are amazing.
Yeah, you said she was a female Vic. I got that vibe. I mean, yeah, I thought you guys were going to hook up or something. That y'all had a lot of intense scenes.
Yeah, no, it was really, really cool. It was really great stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And actually, the only reason I didn't, they actually had wanted me to come back to The Shield, but by the time they had asked me to come back, I had just booked Lincoln Heights. And
okay.
I felt like they wanted me to come back and do pretty much the whole season of The Shield, but Lincoln Heights was this new black family drama. You know, and I don't know if this was a mistake or not, but I really felt like Lincoln Heights needed my 100% attention, and I didn't want to be splitting my focus and having them work around my very hectic schedule, because when you work with The Shield, you know, you're very busy. And I wanted to be able to focus and give all of my focus, attention, energy onto Lincoln Heights. So I passed on going back to The Shield and did Lincoln Heights.
Hmm.
You know, just
but
focus on it.
You hear that, folks? Now, that's a good problem. Do I work on The Shield part-time and Lincoln Heights part-time? Oh, let me choose. Should I do one, half of one, half of
right.
the other, or
right,
all of one?
Right.
So talk a little bit more about Lincoln Heights.
Well, I mean, Lincoln Heights was just Lincoln Heights. It's the thing about Lincoln Heights, and first of all, it's a fantastic show to work on, but what I'm most proud of is its staying power. You know, we were the little engine that could on ABC Family, and the resonance power that show has with people who are watching the reruns and just now discovering the show, it's such a special show that I think as long as it has a home somewhere on somebody's cable network, you know, people are really going to enjoy this show and enjoy this family. And it's sad that we don't get a chance to see, you know, more examples of us like that. But I am thankful every day for that show and what the mark it sort of left on our little bit of this tiny mark on television history. Because, you know, for our people, because I run into the black folk, you know, at the airport and different places. I mean, it's different in Los Angeles because everyone's a little bit like, oh, I've been there, done that, I've seen it, you know, it's no big deal. But this show is very meaningful to black families, black young black women, young black men across the country, and it has an impact. The messages in the show are really powerful, and they're classic. They don't die. They don't die.
Right.
And I'm really proud of it. I'm proud of all of us for the show. I mean, and it really was sometimes a cast comes together and there's a magical thing about it. We were a family from the day we all met, and it never stopped. Never stopped.
And I think that makes it a lot easier. You know, everybody gets along and has that rapport.
Oh, it was barely like work. Like, are we working or are we hanging out? I mean, it was just easy. I mean, me and the kids and me and Russell. I mean, it was just and all of us. It was a very. I mean, it was a blessing. It was wonderful. You can't argue with it at all.
So talk a little bit about Their Eyes Were Watching God. That's another thing I saw you in.
Yeah. That's a wonderful piece. That was Oprah Winfrey Presents Their Eyes Were Watching God, starring Halle and Michael Ealy and Ruben Santiago. I mean, gosh, what a great cast that was. That was wonderful. I mean, I love doing period pieces. I love two things about it. I love doing period pieces. I love wearing really expensive costumes. And I had never worked with Halle before, and I played her best friend in the movie. And I got a chance to actually get to know her and hang out with her and become friends. And that was just really, really cool to do that. It was a great project, though. It was really fun. Lots of sitting in the heat in the summer. It was actually the summer that right after we did Their Eyes Were Watching God, Terrence went and did Hustle and Flow.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was really funny because Hustle, you know, Hustle and Flow wasn't Hustle and Flow. It was some independent movie. And we were all just a bunch of, you know, Negroes sitting on a very hot porch out there on the Disney Ranch. And it's just fantastic to, you know, you should see the cast photos. You know, and Ruby Dee, you know, played Hallie's mother in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Just meeting her. When Ruby Dee came to set, this was something. Because everybody, like, lost their mind, but then they tried to keep it secret, right? So Ruby Dee comes to set. No, and Ruby Dee's just Ruby Dee. She's trying to figure out this and that and whatever. She's talking to the director and shaking hands. And then slowly people start sort of circling and, like, people start taking pictures, but they don't really ask permission. They're sort of snapping pictures, kind of, you know how you snap a picture incognito? Like, you keep it down
right.
low, by the way, snap, you know? And then next thing you know, there's, like, a cast of 20 surrounding Ruby Dee, just smiling from ear to ear. Where is Ruby Dee? So that was something. And watching Ruby Dee work, wow. It was really wonderful. It was really, I learned a lot. You know, just her commitment, her intensity, it was really fantastic. Good stuff.
What's some of the things you learned?
Well, just sort of how, when I watched Ruby Dee, it was like watching, there was no other world but the one she had created. There was no camera. I was not there watching her from the side. There was only the reality of the show, meaning her daughter, played by Hallie, the room, the laundry, and that was it. It was as if nothing, it was so real. It was so real, where she was so completely focused and committed to her choices that you watch it and you have no doubt. You see nothing but, well, that's Janie's mom, and she is pissed off right now, let me tell you. And it's just, it's that kind of, that depth of commitment. It was fantastic to see. Fantastic to see.
Let's go back in time a little bit and tell me a little bit about your training.
Oh, well, that's a short conversation.
you sort of plunge right in? You sort of plunged right in to TV, or
I took a handful. Like, I think I took two, maybe three classes in college, and then I started doing shows. I mean, I took one class, started doing shows, basically, and then I threw in a couple other ones. But I don't think they were actually acting class. They were like more. I took a voice class and maybe a writing class because I had sort of dabbled in the BFA program. But mostly, I performed. I did shows and shows and shows. And then I came out here and worked and did shows, and I would take an acting class, kind of a scene study class. I mean, I didn't get really serious about training, to be perfectly honest, until many, many years in my into my career. And it was to solve a problem, because at that point I was getting so many love interest roles with these intimate sex scenes that I really didn't know quite what to do.
Oh, that's weird.
No, I know it's weird, right? I know it's weird, but it was one of those things. Like, they don't actually teach you how to do that kind of stuff. You're just supposed to do it, and you know, I never dated. I was a nerd. I was a total nerd. I didn't know anything about, like, my sexuality or anything like that. I was a very bright, honor student, nerdy artist, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm on Soul Food playing a temptress. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how I got here. I don't know why they hired me. And so it became like I had to, you know, I remember going to acting class and working on all the great love stories, all the great female roles, all the great love stories, trying to figure out how to do this, how to feel comfortable playing these parts, because it wasn't something I was comfortable with. I didn't know it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that you got to continually train.
I'm sorry, what?
I said you have to continually train.
Oh yes, and then after Lincoln Heights, I went back into training for other things. I mean, just in terms of, like, you know, just training for the sake of keeping yourself, you know, really oiled up and warm and active, and then, you know, working on picking up a camera and starting to shoot things. You know, it's just, I think you always have to be training. You always, always, always have to be training. I think it's the most important thing we do, because as an actor in Hollywood, you're in the Olympics. What athlete wouldn't train?
Exactly, exactly. You're a professional auditioner, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And auditioning is actually much harder than the job.
Yeah, I believe so. I think you're right about that. So before I let you go, I just want to hit a couple more questions here. So what's your take on survival jobs for actors? I know there are a lot of, I think it was Sam Jackson was talking about that, that he reached a point where he wasn't going to take any more survival jobs, that he was going to do stay in the theater, either building sets or acting or whatever. So what was your take on that coming up?
Well, you know, I was always I went to graduate school and I was a teacher. I taught freshman level college. So my thing was I just kept teaching. I waited tables for a minute, but I found waiting tables to be kind of not really a lifestyle that I really liked. And I really felt like teaching really satisfied me in a really big way. It was a way to give back, so I kept teaching. You know, it's not really a survival job, but it was just, to me, survival is about doing what you love to do. And I love teaching. I love helping people. And sometimes I help out and teach acting classes, but I don't always have to be teaching acting classes. I mean, I like teaching. I like mentoring. And I think surviving is about, you know, what it is that makes your soul sing in addition to your acting career, because you're not just your career. I mean, you're a person. You're a lot of things.
Okay. I got two more questions, and I think we'll wrap it up. I had a question about how do you make your choice? What process do you go through to make your choices in auditions?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, it's kind of it's hard to answer succinctly.
Do your best.
You read over the material quite a bit. And I think you just sort of just see what hits me. What are my first thoughts? And they usually sometimes they're crazy. And then, you know, it's kind of like wearing the stripper outfit to the cop audition. You know, sometimes they're crazy, and you write them down, and you throw them on a stick, and you stick it to your script, and you just keep moving. And usually I find that those crazy first ideas sometimes are golden. And having the courage to stick with that, those creative thoughts that are completely outside the box that make no sense to you, but you're trying to just tune your ear to your creative voice. So I think that's kind of how I go about finding my choices. I've tried to be open and see what comes to me. You know, another time, you know, if I have more time to work on an audition, I might watch films from the period or films about the period to sort of help inform about the subject matter, to help kind of put me in a world where you start to really kind of absorb yourself in this world and then make choices from that point of view. So now you have a point of view that's so heavily steeped in the world, and then you start making creative choices from there.
That was so deep. Wow, I'm going to go back and listen to this show and really absorb what you just said, because that was really, I could tell
really?
You put a lot of little thought. Well, you put a lot of thought into it, and that's good. I think it comes through in your performances. That was a very good answer. So, last question is, you can just talk a little bit about what you're working on now, plug what you're working on now, and what you're going to be doing in the future.
Well, I am the new voice of Wells Fargo. My first big voiceover campaign, which is new, and actually voiceover work is kind of exhausting. I had no idea.
As well.
So I'm doing that, and it's fun, and I enjoy it. And you know, I'm auditioning like crazy, and I'm writing. Of course, I'm still trying to see how far I can take Veil, the movie I wrote, and then I'm also writing a new movie that I hope to shoot one day, and I don't plan to act in it at all. I definitely have aspirations of getting behind the camera and trying to shoot my feature I've been working on.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the challenge with that is, of course, raising the money.
Yeah, I got an idea about that, though. I got
that's
an idea
fantastic.
Working on with that one. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Nikki, well, it was great. It was really great having you on as a guest. I'd like to have you on again sometime.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay. Hey, well, good luck on everything you're working on. Break legs and everything.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody. I just want to say to all of my listeners out there to do something for your career every day and break a leg. Have a great night.